welcome to Talking Translations by Literature Ireland. We have a reading from a novel today, Leonard and Hungry Paul, by Ronan Heshen. Ronan is joined by Inger Johansson, who reads her translation into Swedish. Leonard and Hungry Paul is Ronan's debut novel. It was published this year by Blue Moose Books in the UK and Ireland, and by Melville House Books in the US. It was nominated for a host of prizes, including Best Debut in the British Book Awards and the Kerry Group Irish Novel of the Year Prize. Besides writing novels, Ronan has released three albums of storytelling songs under the name Mumblin' Deaf Row. Ronan's second novel, called Panenka, will be published in May 2021. Leonard and Hungry Paul is a curious story with the two title characters as warm and easy company. So here is Ronan reading from the first two chapters to introduce them to us.
Chapter 1, Leonard. Leonard was raised by his mother alone with cheerfully concealed difficulty, his father having died tragically during childbirth. Though she was not by nature the soldiering type, she taught him to look at life as a daisy chain of small events, each of which could be made manageable in its own way. She was a person for whom kindness was a very ordinary thing, who believed that the only acceptable excuse for not having a bird feeder in the back garden was that you had one in the front garden. As sometimes happens with boys who prefer games to sports, Leonard had few friends but lots of ideas. His mother understood, with intuitive good sense, that children like Leonard just need someone to listen to them. They would set off to the shops discussing conga reels and have a deep conversation about Saturn's moons on the way back. They would talk about tidal waves at bath time and say goodnight with a quick chat about the man with the longest fingernails in the Guinness Book of World Records. But Leonard grew up at a time when quiet, imaginative children did not yet enjoy the presumption of innocence. His mother often found herself having to take his side against ornery teachers who complained that they found it impossible to get through to him. With patient maternal endurance, she would sit by herself at parent-teacher meetings, explaining that, like his late father, he just lacked a eureka face. Even into his 30s, Leonard's mother still liked to fuss over him, buying his favourite ham for lunch, the one with fewer veins running through it, leaving tea by the bedside for when he woke up, and ironing well-meaning creases into his jeans, which Leonard would quietly iron out later. He repaid her thoughtfulness by keeping her company through her later years and generally including her in the uncrowded bandwidth of his life. Leonard was not exactly sure, but there must have come a point when their relationship grew from a purely filial one into one of partnership. Though an adult son living with his widowed mother is a situation about which society has yet to adopt a formal position, it is clearly seen in second best terms. Insofar as anyone noticed, they might have assumed that she was overbearing, or that he lacked initiative and possibly a sex drive. In reality, neither sought to limit or interfere with the other, both being independent people who liked their own space and who quite simply got along. Leonard did recall some awkwardness around the suggestion that they go on holidays together, though he was not entirely certain which of them had first proposed it. Mother-daughter holidays are normal, of course, and father-son trips are famously storied as a way to come of age. Mother-son holidays, though, have the connotation that one of them must be a burden on the other. But truth be told, they were well suited as travelling companions. She was a keen walker and a good gallery feat, being able to wander around any reasonable exhibition in its entirety without being distracted by the gift shop honeypots that drew in tired women half her age. They both liked churches, and even though Leonard was not religious himself, much of the world's art is. He would enjoy visiting famous paintings and sculptures in European cathedrals, while his mother would busy herself lighting a candle in the side chapel for her fragile, long-departed husband. She had never really asked Leonard about girls, knowing the delicacy of the subject for him, and also because of her own doubts about whether his apparently celibate life was due to a lack of interest or opportunity. For Leonard, the fact that he still lived at home with his mother led to a certain self-restraint on practical grounds. He had wondered what would have happened had he brought a girl home, only for them to wake up to two cups of tea at the bedside the next morning. His mother passed away unexpectedly one midweek night in her sleep, tucked into a duvet with her clothes all laid out for the next day, her neatness being a sign of her respect for the small things in her life. The doctor noted the cause of death as a heart attack, but emphasised that there were no signs of suffering or drama. He said that her heart must have simply run out of beats. As Leonard was a shy only child of two shy only children, it was a small funeral. The front of the church was practically empty, with the exception of Leonard, as people tended to underestimate their relative closeness to the deceased and sit several rows further back than they should. With no extended family to rely on, Leonard had to multitask at the funeral, reading the prayers of the faithful, bringing up the offertory gifts, and taking care of all the other minor jobs that are usually done by cousins and in-laws. The priest's sermon was a generic one about death and hope, which was a relief for Leonard, as his mother disliked it when people summarised a dead person's life in a glib caricature. Had he had the courage, Leonard would have spoken up and said that his mother looked after everyone in her life as though they were her garden birds, that is to say, with unconditional pleasure and generosity. At the crematorium, her coffin was launched through the red drapes on a set of rails in a slightly halting motion, fittingly reminiscent of the ghost train she so enjoyed at the funfair. With her fear of heights and contests, she had often found funfairs a bit of a trial, but went for Leonard's sake and enjoyed the ghost train as it was basically a slow drive through a dark fluorescent art gallery. As the curtains closed over the coffin to the strains of Nothing Rhymed by her favourite singer Gilbert O'Sullivan, Leonard wiped a tear from his glasses and headed back to the family home, now his home, as an orphan. When an only child loses their second parent, the calendar of the generations turns a page. There are practicalities and arrangements to take care of, but there is also a more general facing up to things. Ready or not, here they come. The result is an alloy of sadness and bewilderment. It was in this state, with his mood tuned down an octave, that Leonard spent his first few weeks after the funeral, staring at a pie cooking in the oven, lingering over a bag of sunflower hearts at the bird feeder, or pausing sadly with a highlighter over an entry in the TV guide. If, during that period, you were to ask him what was on his mind or otherwise use the commonplace ways of snapping someone out of it, that is to say, interrupting them for no reason, he would have been at a loss to tell you, his mundane consciousness returning like a cat who walks in after being away for a few days without any explanation. After dinner each evening, he would sit on the couch in that customary way of single men for whom time is something to fill rather than spend. He would open one of the historical biographies waiting patiently on his bookcase, several of which had bookmarks just a few pages in, the subjects yet to get beyond their childhood. He found bookshops to be comforting places and book buying a comforting activity, but he was an absent-minded reader these days, the act of reading that much more solitary without his mother pottering around the house in the background. He would sit at the table and try to copy sketches from a birdwatcher's year, a sanderling scuttling along the shore, or a guillemot with its eggs shaped like a pear to stop them from rolling off cliffs. But with nobody to show those sketches to, he became careless about the details on the feathers and the subtlety of the colours. And of course there was always the TV, supreme among alternatives, though strangely distant when there is no longer someone else on the couch to talk about it with. Had Leonard been a different type of person, he might have gone to the pub to meet some friends for an evening of darts, dominoes, cards, or other prison games. But nothing made him feel lonelier these days than the thought of spending time in the company of extroverts. It is at times like this that we find out who our true friends are, or, in Leonard's case, we call upon our only friend. And so, to avoid or fill that stale chapter of the evening, Leonard had made it a habit to take refuge in the company of Hungry Paul. Chapter 2. Hungry Paul emerged from the bathroom wearing a white fluffy bathrobe tied with a white belt, tracksuit bottoms and flip-flops with some tissue paper stuck to them. He was shaking his wrists and wore the look of intense concentration that is characteristic of a man with wet hands looking for a towel. The fact that he was in the unlikely position of wearing clothes made from the very material he needed might have tempted a lesser man. But having already run the risk of doing a sit-down toilet while wearing white, he was not minded to capitulate under a lesser challenge. He resolved his difficulty by retrieving a t-shirt from the linen basket and drying his hands on it, his assessment being that clothes that were clean enough to wear only a short time previously were unlikely to have become too dirty to use in the meantime. There was much pleasure and relief, and as Hungry Paul noticed Leonard, he welcomed him with genuine warmth. "Hi, Leonard. They sent you up. Great, great. How are things?" "Good, thanks. What's with the bathrobe?" asked Leonard. "Ah, I've begun training in the martial arts. How do I look?" "You look like the real thing, all right. What's brought this on? It's not like you to do something violent." "Oh, I haven't changed my mind about violence, but the martial arts are more about stillness and action, calm in the midst of combat. It's certainly physical, but the mind remains still and peaceful. There's no mental violence, no ill will, which is the worst part of violence. And besides, it's judo, so there's no punching in the face or anything like that." "And how do you feel about rolling around with Neanderthals? I thought you didn't like people touching you. Never mind twisting your limbs into a figure eight." "Well, there is that. I actually thought it might help with my personal space issues. As you say, it's one of the more intimate combat sports, hence we wear sleepover gear rather than, say, black tie. But to be honest, the result's my personal fitness to think of. I can't very well tackle a black belt. I can't even tackle stairs without panting." Hungry Paul then dropped to the floor and started a push-up on his knuckles. There was a cracking sound, followed by some oaths. And then he started again, looking like a breakdancer doing the caterpillar. "How many do you have to do?" asked Leonard. "My sensei says I should keep going until I find my limit and then go beyond it. To be like water. It was easier in the class with the spongy mats. My wooden floors are actually quite hard. Maybe I'll try it with grippy socks instead of flip-flops." "You look good in all the gear, though. The white belt, that's pretty impressive. What sort of moves have you learned so far?" "So far, it's steady as she goes. The first thing they teach you is how to sign a waiver form. And then they teach you how to break a fall so you don't get hurt. Although I suspect whether I get hurt or not is as much up to my future opponents as it is up to me. Then we did some drills with the others. Most of them are a bit bigger than me, so I was mainly practicing my defence. I suppose it should be good for your mental strength too. The martial arts are known for emphasising oneness of mind and body," said Leonard, who had actually written something on the martial arts in the children's encyclopedia about the Olympics, though the combat sports got only a brief section at the back, along with shooting, weightlifting, and a fact box about steroids.
Inger Johansen is a literary translator, and she translates from English and Romanian into Swedish. She's passionate about translating and translators' rights, and for some years, at the beginning of the 2000s, she was the proud chair of the Swedish Translators Union. Inger has translated many wonderful novels, and so far, for Irish titles, she's translated Redemption Falls and Ghost Light, both by Joseph O'Connor. Here's Inger reading her translation of Leonard and Hungry Paul into Swedish. Enjoy.
Thank you. Ronan Hesiod, Leonard and Hungry Paul, Chapter 1 and 2. Leonard uppfostrades med glatt hemlighållen möda av sin ensamstående mor sedan fadern tragiskt nog avlidit då han föddes. Till sin natur var modern inte den stridbara sorten, men hon lärde honom att se livet som ett pärlband av småhändelser som var för sig på sitt vis kunde göras hanterliga. Hon var en människa för vilken vänlighet var något alldeles vanligt. En som fullt och fast menade att den enda godtagbara ursäkten för att inte ha ett fågelbord i trädgården på baksidan av huset var att man hade ett på framsidan. Som fallet är ibland med pojkar som hellre spelar spel än ägnar sig åt sport, hade Leonard få vänner men många funderingar. Modern förstod med intuitivt gott förstånd att barn som Leonard helt enkelt behöver någon som lyssnar. De kunde gå och handla mitt uppe i en diskussion om havsålar och vara inbegripna i ett djupt samtal om Saturnus månar på hemvägen. De kunde prata om tidvatten när sonen skulle bada och säga godnatt med ett snabbt utbyte om mannen med världens längsta naglar i Guinness rekordbok. Men Leonard växte upp i en tid då tystlåtna, fantasifulla barn ännu inte förutsattes vara oskyldiga tills motsatsen hade bevisats. Modern fann sig ofta föranlåten att ta hans parti mot griniga lärare som klagade och sa att det var omöjligt att få kontakt med honom. Tålmodig och moderligt uthållig kunde hon sitta ensam på mötena med lärare och förklara att sonen var som fadern hade varit. Det bara syntes inte på honom när poletten trillade ner. Till och med när han var över 30 tyckte modern om att pyssla om honom. Köpte hans älsklingsskinka till lunch, den som inte hade så många fettsträngar. Kom med te på sängen när han vaknade och strök välmenande pressväck i hans jeans som han själv sen lugnt och stilla strök bort. Han lönade hennes omsorg med att hålla hennes sällskap genom medelåldern och på det hela taget införliva henne i sin tillvaros glesbefolkade frekvensband. Han var inte helt säker, men relationen till modern måste vid en viss punkt ha vuxit från att vara ett renodlat förhållande mellan mor och son till att bli ett kompanjonskap. Att en vuxen son bor ihop med sin änka till mor är visserligen en situation som samhället ännu inte har någon formell inställning till, men den ses helt klart bara som den näst bästa. I den mån någon alls la märke till det, kanske folk antog att hon var dominant eller att han saknade initiativförmåga och eventuellt sexualdrift. I själva verket försökte ingen av dem begränsa eller lägga sig i den andras förehavanden, eftersom de var självständiga personer som tyckte om att få vara i fred och helt enkelt trivdes ihop. Tanken att de skulle åka på semester tillsammans hade faktiskt känts lite genant, det kom Leonard ihåg. Fast han var lite osäker på vem det var som hade föreslagit det. Att mor och dotter semestrar ihop är förstås normalt. Och att far och son gör det blir gärna till historier om invigning i vuxenvärlden. Men om mor och son reser bort tillsammans är det underförstått att någon av dem måste vara en börda för den andra. Men sanningen att säga var de väl ägnade att vara reskamrater. Hon var en hängiven vandrare med goda gallerifötter och kunde avverka betydande utställningar utan att låta sig distraheras av frestande presentshoppar som lockade till sig trötta kvinnor med bara hälften så många år på nacken som hon. Både hon och Leonard tyckte om kyrkor. Och även om han själv inte var religiös så är en stor del av världens konstskatter det. Han tyckte om att se på berömda målningar och skulpturer i europeiska katedraler, medan modern i något sidoskepp ägnade sig åt att tända ljus för sin klene, för länge sedan avlidne man. Hon hade egentligen aldrig fört ämnet flickor på tal med Lennart, väl vetande att det var känsligt för honom. Och likaså därför att hon själv hyste tvivel om huruvida det ungkarlsliv han uppenbarligen levde berodde på bristande intresse eller brist på tillfällen. För Lennart ledde det faktum att han bodde kvar hemma av praktiska skäl till en viss återhållsamhet. Han hade undrat hur det skulle ha gått om han tog med sig en flicka hem och de nästa morgon vaknade och fick se två koppar te på nattduksbordet. Modern avled oväntat i sömnen en natt mitt i veckan med duntäcket omstoppat och kläderna framlagda inför nästa dag, eftersom hennes prydlighet nu en gång var ett tecken på hennes respekt för de små tingen i livet. Läkaren konstaterade att dödsorsaken var hjärtinfarkt, men poängterade att ingenting tydde på lidande eller dödskamp. Han sa att hjärtslagen helt enkelt måste ha tagit slut. Eftersom Lennart var ett blygt ändabarn till två blyga ändabarn blev begravningen liten. Längst fram i kyrkan var det praktiskt taget tomt, så när som på Lennart, eftersom folk gärna undervärderar hur nära de stått den avlidna och sätter sig längre bak än de ska. Utan släktingar att lita till var Lennart tvungen att göra det mesta själv. Han läste församlingens böner, han bar fram offertoriegåvorna och tog hand om alla mindre sysslor som annars utförs av kusiner och ingifta. Prästens predikan handlade om döden och hoppet i största allmänhet, vilket var en lättnad för Lennart eftersom modern hade tyckt illa om när man sammanfattade den dödes liv till en ytlig karikatyr. Hade han haft kurage nog skulle han ha tagit till orda och sagt att hans mor hade tagit hand om alla i sitt liv som om de hade varit hennes trädgårdsfåglar, det vill säga med villkorslös förnöjsamhet och generositet. Hungrige Paul kom ut från badrummet iförd en fluffig vit badrock med skärp, träningsbyxor och flip-flop-tofflor som lite mjukpapper hade fastnat på. Han riste händerna och ansiktsuttrycket var typiskt för en människa med våta händer som letar efter en handduk. Det faktum att han befann sig i den osannolika situationen att vara klädd just sånt tyg som han behövde kunde ha varit frestande för en svagare själ. Men eftersom han redan hade tagit risken att sätta sig på toalettstolen vitklädd och göra sina behov var han inte benägen att kapitulera inför denna mindre utmaning. Han löste problemet genom att fiska upp en t-shirt ur tvättkorgen och torka händerna på den efter att ha gjort bedömningen att kläder som helt nyligen varit rena nog att ha på sig sedan dess knappast hade blivit så smutsiga att de inte gick att använda. Lättnaden är en stor njutning och så snart hungrige Paul fick syn på Lennart mottog han honom med stor värme. Hej Lennart, så de skickade upp dig. Jättefint. Hur är läget?
Tack, bra. Varför har du badrocken på dig? Undrade Lennart.
Jo, jag har börjat träna kampsport. Hur ser jag ut?
Du ser helt rätt ut. Vad är det som har fått dig att börja med det? Det är inte likt dig att göra något våldsamt.
Nej då, jag har inte ändrat mening om våldet. Men kampsport handlar mer om stillhet i aktion. Lugn mitt i striden. Visst är det fysiskt, men i sinnet är det stilla och fridfullt.
Det är inte fråga om mentalt våld. Det är ingen illvilja som är det värsta med våldet. Och förresten är det judo. Så det är inte fråga om att smocka till någon eller så. Och hur känns det att rulla runt med neandertalare? Jag trodde inte du tyckte om att folk tar i dig. För att inte tala om vrider armar och ben till åttor. Ja, det är just det. Jag trodde faktiskt att det skulle kunna hjälpa mig med mina personliga rymdproblem. Som du säger är det en mer intim kampsport. Det är därför vi har pyjamasar på oss och inte till exempel smoking. Men ärligt talat har jag också min form att tänka på. Jag kan inte gärna tampas med ett svart bälte om jag inte ens kan gå upp för trappan utan att bli andfådd. Därpå föll hungrige Paul ner på golvet och började göra armhävningar stående på knogarna. Det hördes ett knakande följt av en del svordomar. Sen började han om och liknade en breakdansare som gjorde larven. Hur många måste du göra? Undrade Leonard. Min sensei säger att jag ska hålla på tills jag hittar min gräns och sen överskrida den. Bara som vatten. Det var lättare på lektionen med mjuk matta, för mina trägolv är faktiskt rätt hårda. Jag kanske ska träna med såna där sockor med halkskydd istället för flip-flops. Fast du är snygg i den där stassen. Vitt bälte, det är rätt imponerande. Vad har du lärt dig för någonting hittills? Hittills har det bara gått av bara farten. Det första man får lära sig är att fylla i en blankett om att man gör allt på egen risk. Och sen får man lära sig att falla så att man inte slår sig. Fast jag misstänker att om jag slår mig eller inte beror lika mycket på motståndarna som på mig. Sen har vi gjort en del övningar med de andra. De flesta är lite större än jag. Så jag har mest tränat försvar. Jag antar att det är bra för ens mentala styrka också. Kampsporter ska ju vara inriktade på enheten mellan kropp och själ, sa Leonard som i själva verket hade skrivit om kampsporter i en uppslagsbok för barn om olympiska spelen. Fast ämnet bara hade fått begränsat utrymme på slutet tillsammans med skytte, tyngdlyftning och en faktaruta om anabola steroider.
Thank you so much for listening. Thank you to Ronan Heschen and thank you to Inger Johansson. If you'd like to read the English and Swedish transcripts, visit literatureireland.com. Literature Ireland promotes Irish literary authors and their work worldwide and is funded by Culture Ireland and the Arts Council. Learn more about what we do at literatureireland.com. And if you'd like to say hello, my name is Lindsay and you can email info@literatureireland.com. I'd be happy to reply. Look forward to further episodes with new episodes every 2 weeks. Coming up is a piece of Neve Campbell's novel, This Happy, and soon we'll have a short story by Rosemary Jenkinson, and many more to come as well. Until then, take care.